Right now, the biggest song of the year so far is a country song, Last Night by Morgan Wallen. But in spite of country's dominance, country radio, by the numbers, is still more than 99% white.
What is it about country music that has not changed the way rock music has changed, the way hip-hop has changed, soul, R&B? How is that possible? How is that feasible?
We talk country's race problem this week on Intuit, Vulture's pop culture podcast.
Welcome to Switched On Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
Charlie, recently I was scrolling through ye old Twitter searching for some dank memes to entertain myself when I came across a clip from 2020 of the show American Idol that captured a very tense interaction between the judge, Katy Perry, and one of the auditioners.
Sometimes I go out by myself.
Slow down.
And I look across the water.
Say all the words. Don't cut the words off.
Since you've been around, and my body's been a mess, and I miss your ginger.
Enunciate the words.
Enunciate the words, Charlie.
It's very combative.
I feel like this clip went viral because of that combative interaction.
Yeah.
But also because in that short clip, we get a crystalline example of a popular style of singing that has produced reactions of love, but also, like Katy Perry here, hate.
Enunciate the words.
A style that features elongated vowels, clipped consonants, and run-on phrasing. It's a style associated with contemporary singers like Halsey,
he used to meet me on the east side in the city where the sun goes.
Georgia Smith,
said all the girls about our chats and get upset when you didn't text back.
And Shawn Mendes,
just like a moth drawn to a flame. Oh, you led me in, I couldn't sense the pain.
It got its name from a 2009 tweet by the user Trackdroppa saying, quote, "Voice so smooth, it's like I'm singing in cursive." Okay, Charlie, so that is what we're talking about here. Cursive singing. Are you familiar with this vocal phenomenon?
I am. It's something I've never fully understood because it feels like people are singing in another English dialect that doesn't exist. I find it compelling in that, like, it requires me to listen more closely. Like, why do your A's sound like I's? I also know that it has received a good amount of derision. I feel like sometimes people negatively call this indie girl voice, also gender it. So, I'm vaguely familiar with the topic, but I definitely don't really understand why it's happening, exactly what it is. You said, like, clipped consonants and elongated vowels. So yeah, I feel like I could use an education on what's happening with this cursive singing trend.
Charlie, we will take you to cursive singing school in this episode. Fear not.
Okay.
So today I want to ask, where did this cursive style come from? What are the vocal techniques used to create this sound? And why does cursive singing create so much of that backlash that you were talking about, Charlie?
Okay, take me to the beginning. Where does it start?
Well, it starts with the singer whose song we heard being covered in that American Idol clip. Who is that, Chuck?
Amy Winehouse?
Indeed.
Well, sometimes I go out by myself and I look across the water.
That's Amy Winehouse singing Valerie from 2007 on the Mark Ronson album version. And that song is now canonic, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that it was recorded in the style of a 1960s pop hit, I think, has helped solidify it as one of those songs that will fit into like a wedding band set or background music, or it might even just blend in with like oldies radio at this point. And of course, I think part of it is Amy Winehouse's great performance, but also the tragedy that she left the world so soon.
Part of Amy Winehouse's legacy is that retro sound that you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. But perhaps less heralded is her vocal technique. And the way she starts this song is very striking. It's both totally in command. Every pitch is exactly where it's supposed to be. But when it comes to the phrasing and the enunciation, she intentionally leaves some of the words kind of open. She massages the vowels. She gives every syllable its own little character and personality.
Well, sometimes
water.
Water. It's like, why sing one syllable when you could say three? And it turns out in the mid-2000s in the UK, Amy Winehouse isn't the only singer experimenting with this vocal approach, which, to be clear, at this point doesn't have a name. It's just kind of this thing that's starting to bubble up. You can hear it on a track from a year earlier by Corrine Bailey Rae, Put Your Records On.
Don't you let those other boys fool you.
Not quite as dramatic as Amy Winehouse, maybe, but using a similar approach. Bending vowels, leaving off consonants at the end of words. And when you hear those two singers back to back, I think you can hear how they're both maybe channeling even older styles, jazz singing especially.
Oh, yeah.
Amy Winehouse, very heavily influenced by singers like Billie Holiday.
What I feel for you.
I can hear the exact same bending of vowels, the compressed and somewhat nasally quality of the vocal. Every phoneme becomes an opportunity for a creative interpretation.
While the style evolved in the UK in the mid-2000s, it didn't really take off on the pop charts until the mid-2010s.
Ooh.
That's when songs like Selena Gomez's Good For You started rocketing up the charts.
Now you say I got a touch, so good, so good. Make you never wanna leave, so don't, so don't.
I recognize this sound. That feels like a Julia Michaels co-write who is another one of those songwriters and artists who takes a lot of creative license with the cursiveness of their voice.
We can hear this cursive singing sound in the way Selena Gomez pronounces the titular phrase here, good for you.
There's like an extra I or Y in the good. Goyed.
Goyed. It's
Goyed.
Kind of sounds like a street urchin in Brooklyn at the turn of the century. Goyed. Hey, good for you. Moira, it's Moira on me. And you mentioned creative license. That's definitely at play here.
Yeah.
I mean, could you tell me what Selena Gomez is singing exactly in this line, Charles?
Door it up like my eyes.
Do it up like, I have no idea what she's singing right there.
Wow, I'm impressed you got that far. Doing it up like Midas, Charlie, right? The golden touch.
Yeah. Midas.
Yeah.
That's a very literary reference. It's bizarre.
A very literary reference that is almost impossible to decipher, which is part of the point of this cursive singing, right?
I have to hear that again. Do you say like Moitus? What does she say?
I'm on the 14 carats. I'm 14 carat. Doing it up like Midas.
Okay, I got it. I'm 14 carat doing it up like Midas. But what's also bizarre is the syllabic reference. Midas instead of Midas. It's strange.
She's putting her own cursive imprint on these lyrics, right? So it's as much about the content of the words as it is the way she's delivering them. Something that's also true of a vocalist who had some big hits around this time. Sia uses cursive singing on a lot of tracks, and you can hear it on a 2016 hit like Cheap Thrills.
Come on, come on, turn the radio.
Yeah, she sings all of her I's like O-I-G-H-T. Instead of singing night, she sings like noit. The I's are a oi.
Noit, yeah. Again, we're back to the street urchin from early 1900s Brooklyn. Noit, noit. So this Cursive Sound has now sort of migrated from this retro soul British scene to these world-beating pop smashes. And we've offered kind of our own amateur interpretation of what these singers are doing.
Yeah.
But I feel like in order to truly break down this sound, we need to ask a vocal expert how these singers are achieving this. So I asked our producer colleague, Rihanna, to call up a pro.
My name is Ashayla Shanae. I am the CEO and founder of Vocal Wall Street. I am an expert celebrity vocal health, performance pedagogy, and voice monetization coach.
Great. Vocal Wall Street. This is perfect because cursive singing is all about putting your imprint on it. And Vocal Wall Street sounds like, how do you get those checks that you can sign?
Charlie, it might surprise you that this is the first thing Ashayla told us.
Cursive singing is like a child having a tantrum and not really forming their words correctly.
Okay, so we need to train to be like a child throwing a tantrum.
Charlie, if you need help tapping into your inner child, Ashayla broke this technique down for us a little further.
There's something in cursive singing, what we call diphthongization. So it's like really prolonging the vowel and bending it. So things like flood. In cursive singing, you'll say things like Floyd, or time. They'll say things like, I'm going back in time, like imitating like an angry child's pronunciation.
Okay, diphthongization. Wow, what a great word, first of all.
This has nothing to do with the Cisco song whatsoever.
No, nothing to do with the thong song. This is a diphthong, as in a vowel that's kind of between two vowels.
Mm.
So it's not A or E, it's A. And it's not O or ooh, it's O.
Oh, or like in the Sia case, instead of I or O, it's oi.
Noit. Yeah, O-I, noit.
Noit.
So that's what a diphthong is. And what Ashayla is telling us is that you have to actually use this practice of diphthongization, turning a single vowel into one of these multiple vowels.
Ah, like Nate Sloan.
Night Sloan.
Oh, God.
That's going to give me nightmares.
That's your producer tag.
So I thought we could take this lesson from Ashayla and apply it to one of the songs that we just listened to earlier. Maybe Stitches by Shawn Mendes.
Okay.
Just like a moth drawn to a flame. Oh, you lured me in. I couldn't sense the pain.
I heard a little bit of a couldn't instead of couldn't.
Couldn't, yeah.
I feel like there was an opportunity to do some kisses and stitches, which just creates a new rhyming sound that might add some character. But then again, it could sacrifice intelligibility.
Some people think he does do a cursive version of the word stitches, actually.
I'll be needing stitches.
Stitches. But you're not hearing it, is my sense.
It's a little more subtle. It's not stitches. It's like stitches. It's like a move from like an eh to an sound.
I think it's also worth pointing out the way he pronounces the word moth, which doesn't have that ending consonant that you expect.
Just like a moth drawn to a flame.
Oh, there is no moth. It's mot.
Mot, yeah.
It says ma turned.
Mot turned.
And has basically stitched those two words together. Moth and turned becomes moterned.
What you're describing is another hallmark of the cursive singing technique, according to Ashayla. It's this sense of having sentences kind of run on, eliminating punctuation marks. It's like the word itself, cursive. That's when you write words without picking up your pen. So the letters are literally connected and they bleed into one another, right?
I don't know about you, but I remember that I had to learn how to write in cursive in elementary school. And if you look at a lot of my early handwriting, I basically can't read it because I feel like cursive, the handwriting style, has gone completely out of vogue. And I wonder if people listening to this style vocal 20 years in the future will be like, people in the 2010s did not speak like they do today. I have no idea what they are singing. It's all interconnected, interwoven, and the words just blend together.
I can't predict what future generations will think of cursive singing, but I know in the here and now that this style provokes some strong emotion. So now that we have a better understanding of where cursive singing came from and how it works, when we come back after a short break, I want to unpack the cursive singing backlash.
The biggest movie in the country is Barbie.
Hi, Barbie!
The second biggest movie is Oppenheimer. But have you heard about the third biggest movie in the country? It's not Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible 7, Dead Reckoning Part 1. It's not Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny Part 5. It's an action drama about fighting child sex trafficking called Sound of Freedom.
How'd that make you feel? Giving a child his freedom.
It felt good.
On Today Explained, we're going to figure out how this grim movie you haven't seen a single billboard for is beating Tom Cruise and Indiana Jones at the box office.
Okay, Charles, we've been breaking down the history and the technique behind cursive singing, and I feel like we've been honoring these singers, but not everyone has such a rosy view of this style. I want to take you to the dark depths of vocal Reddit.
Oh, no.
Where a 2019 thread from a self-described opera singer poses this question.
You can just say Reddit. You don't have to say the dark depths of Reddit.
Redundant. Here's the title of the thread. How not to sing with that, quote, indie girl voice. And the post goes on to critique, quote, that grating, mewling kitten sound that is all the rage and is about hearing oneself over everything else, end quote.
Kitten mewling?
Yeah, you know. So there's a telltale phrase here that you actually mentioned at the very beginning of the episode. Another name for cursive singing, indie girl voice.
Which is strange because it doesn't feel very indie in that if it's coming from like Amy Winehouse and through large acts like Selena Gomez and Sia, the indie feels pejorative, as does the girl. It's just like pejorative, pejorative, pejorative. You don't like it. I get it.
It's not just, quote, indie girls that use this voice. I mean, we were just listening to Shawn Mendes give us a dictionary example. But it does seem like the backlash of the sound is mainly directed at women singers.
Yep.
And certainly some of the biggest hits using this voice have been sung by women. Take the 2019 track Dance Monkey by Tones and I.
I'd rather not, but if we have to. It has nothing to do with the voice, just not my song.
And now I beg to see you dance just one more time. So I say, dance.
Instead of saying time, we get dime.
Now, Rihanna also interviewed the music journalist Jumi Akinfenwa, who has written the definitive article about the evolution of cursive singing. And she considers this song the epitome of the sound.
I think that's like the Citizen Kane of cursive singing. Like, I think it is like the best example of it.
I agree. This is the most ornate, most scripted cursive. This style is almost more like calligraphy. It is so hyper stylized. You'd have to train very hard to sing just like Dance Monkey.
Dance for me, dance for me, dance for me. Oh, oh. I never seen anybody do the things you do before.
I love that description. The Citizen Kane of cursive singing. In her 2020 article for Vice about the history of the sound, Jumi calls it the final boss of cursive singing, which I also love. And this does feel like maybe the peak of this sound. Like, where else can you go from Tones and I's Dance Monkey?
Mm-hmm.
But even though Dance Monkey was a massive dance pop hit, for Jumi, the sound actually has roots in another tradition adjacent to pop, that indie sound we've been talking about.
I think the actual sound stems a lot from Indie Girl Voice. So there was a Vine in 2015 by a user called Krish. And he's saying, welcome to my kitchen. They have bananas and avocados, but it's all elongated.
Welcome to my kitchen. We have bananas and avocados.
And this Indie Girl Voice that may have been coined in 2015. For Jumi, this actually has roots in an earlier decade and in a very specific place.
It stems a lot from the California vowel shift. There's this linguistic theory that stems from 1980s. And when you think of like the Valley Girl accent, so you combine that with jazz stylings as well as your own vocal style, it sort of amalgamates into this cursive singing that we've dubbed it.
The Great California Vowel Shift, of course.
The California Vowel Shift of the 1980s. Now, even if you're not familiar with this linguistic concept, Charles, perhaps you are familiar with the figure of the Valley Girl. And I think the sine qua non of the Valley Girl accent would be Frank Zappa's 1982 track, Valley Girl, featuring his daughter, Moon Unit Zappa, as the eponymous Valley Girl in question.
Like, oh my God!
Valley Girl!
Like, totally!
Valley Girl!
Totally.
Totally, right. That same diphthongization that Ashayla was identifying in 2010's Cursive Singing, we're now hearing in the Valley Girl accent of the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the California vowel shift.
Mm-hmm.
But where do we get this indie influence that we were talking about? Well, the Valley Girl vocal style wends its way into another unexpected subgenre.
Cursive singing is really exaggerated, but emulating how a lot of indie singers and a lot of people in more pop punk and emo styles at the time, like you think of Can You Find Glory and Blink-180, do they have this sort of Californian dialect, but is almost like exaggerated?
Yes, Blink-182. I feel like all the small things, right? I'm totally exaggerating it, but the way that he sings small things, there's something very particular about the way he says the word things.
Small things.
I hear it, Charles. I wouldn't describe this as cursive singing necessarily, but I think it shares some of those attributes. And I can hear, per what Jumi is saying, like how it filters through this California vowel shift, Valley Girl sound of the 80s. Into these California emo bands of the 2000s, becoming this indie girl persona that then becomes associated with this cursive singing style.
So do you think the backlash is that everyone just likes to hate on California, where everyone's having a better time basking in the sun, like yourself, my LA friend?
That may be a part of it, that West Coast jealousy, but I think it's more part of a larger trend in society. Whenever young women who are always the innovators of vocal style and language create a new sound, whether it's the Valley Girl of the 1980s or the cursive singing of the 2000s, there's always a resistance to it, right? There's this sense that this is not the proper way to speak because these people are not serious members of society. And this represents some kind of degradation of the standards of language.
Right. I feel like we did an extensive analysis of the backlash to the Britney Spears vocal fryization of pop music. And again, a gendered critique of a style of speech, which actually isn't necessarily gendered. All sorts of folks use this kind of singing. But yeah, the grammar policing, the speech policing, any change, it's just like, you know, old man across the street yelling at you kind of vibes.
Shaking his fist.
Kids these days.
Get off my linguistic lawn kind of thing. Yeah, I hear you, Charles. And I think a really important part of the story of the sound is what you just said, how innovations in language go from something that is seen as other to just becoming part of the fabric of the way we talk and the way we sing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I would argue, even if Tones and I, Dance Monkey, represented the apex of cursive singing, and maybe we're not going to hear that particular vocal style as much on the top of the charts, I would say it's just kind of baked into the way we make music now. And I have a few examples I want to end with that might illustrate this trend.
Okay.
So the first is from a classic children's story that I watch with my 2.5-year-old all the time. I'm talking, of course, about Winnie the Pooh.
Sweet.
Which was updated about 10 years ago. And the theme song was sung by Zooey Deschanel. And Charlie, I was watching this with my kid and I was like, wait, are they cursive singing Winnie the Pooh right now?
Christopher's childhood days.
And to me, the most cursive part of that performance is the way she sings neighborhood.
I didn't know that Christopher Robin lived in a neighborhood.
It's like, wait, Winnie, what happened to you? You've been cursified.
And it does make it a bit more of a classic because you had connected the style back to Billie Holiday, and it feels like Zooey Deschanel's vocal is summoning that sound as much as something which is also, you know, 10 years ago very popular.
I love that, because once you start to think of cursive singing as not only this contemporary 21st century phenomenon, you start to hear it in some really unexpected places. And when I was watching a show that I think you might be familiar with called Slow Horses. And I say that because it's clearly a show for dads. This is this MI6 spy thriller.
Yeah, I'm into it.
With a theme song by none other than Mick Jagger.
Yes, a strange, strange game. Strange, strange game. Such a shame, shame, shame.
It's totally right to me that the lead singer of the Rolling Stones is using this vocal style because he's also responsible for a radical shift in the way that people sang, you know, half a century ago. When the British invasion happened, part of what was so appealing was the British accents, the many different accents coming from throughout the United Kingdom that put a new spin on the sound of American rock and roll.
The Rolling Stones.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even the Beatles' Liverpudlian accent is kind of doing that diphthongization work now that I think about it.
Here comes the sun.
No, please, never again. The point here, Chuck, is that cursive singing may appear to be this brief modern vocal phenomena that kind of has come and went, but I think the style isn't going anywhere. From Winnie the Pooh to Mick Jagger, cursive singing is something that is going to stick around. While it might not have the same Citizen Kane quality of Tones and I's Dance Monkey, it's going to appear in some unexpected places. Like when you listen to the pop charts right now, you might hear an artist we've talked about recently, SZA, someone who we celebrated for her endless melodies, and also a little bit of cursive singing in there as well, which might support this melodic approach. It's not as acute as some of the other artists we've listened to, but I think when you listen to a track like Kill Bill, the traces of it are there.
Oh, how she sings here? Absolutely. Rather than being the dominant style, I feel like she uses cursive singing just at the moments that it's needed to elongate the word here, to add a little bit of flavor here or there. And so cursive singing doesn't really feel like a trend, but rather just one of the tools in the performer's tool belt that's been there since like the beginning of pop music and ebbs and fades in terms of the extent to which it's being used.
And there are so many great examples of cursive singing that we weren't able to address in this episode. So if you're listening and you have a favorite cursive singing moment, find us on Twitter or Instagram at SwitchedOnPop and tell us your favorite diphthongizations, elongated vowels, and clipped consonants from pop history.
Switched on Pop is produced by Rihanna Cruz, engineered by Brandon McFarlane, edited by Art Chung, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb, community management by Abby Barr. Our executive producer is Nishat Kerwa. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture. You can find more episodes at switchedonpop.com, and we are on social media everywhere at SwitchedOnPop.
We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, and until then, thanks for listening.